This is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 710, Cairo.
The Crusader for Common Sense has taken a couple of days off. I'm Paul Harris, sitting behind his microphone. I'm proud to have you along on News Talk 710, Cairo. Let me introduce you to Tim Weiner. Tim has written a terrific book called Legacy of Ashes. It is all about your Central Intelligence Agency, its successes and more often its failures through the years. Tim will be speaking tonight at the University of Washington's Henry Art Gallery. Registration there will start at 6:30. The event starts at 7 o'clock. And you can find out more details by going to UW's website. Tim, welcome to News Talk 710 Cairo.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Let me quote from your book, Legacy of Ashes. The most powerful country in the history of Western civilization has failed to create a first-rate spy service. That failure constitutes a danger to the national security of the United States. How so?
We're a superpower. We project power across our borders. We've been doing it every day since the Cold War began, more than 60 years ago. When you project over your borders, you need to know what's going on in those countries overseas. You need to know what people think. You need to know what the correlation of forces is. You need intelligence to tell you what's going on. And when intelligence succeeds, and it does from time to time, it can do great things. It can save lives. It can avert a coup against a friendly leader. Can stop the spread of nuclear weapons. But when intelligence fails, and it so often does, soldiers die, Americans die, and the power of the United States is wasted.
Are we in Iraq because of the failure of the CIA? Is our continued presence their fault?
Not our continued presence, but the justification for going to war, yes. I think we all remember that day, 5 years ago, February 2003, Colin Powell, Secretary of State Powell, is in front of the United Nations. George Tenet, the Director of Central Intelligence, sitting right over his shoulders. And Powell saying, this is our best intelligence. These are hard facts. Iraq is bristling with chemical and biological weapons. It was a very convincing presentation, except for the fact that none of it was true. None of it. We went to war on the assumption that that intelligence was true. It was wrong.
And George Tenet used the phrase slam dunk on WMD when he talked to the president. Was that Tenet's fault, or was it the fault of people under him, or was it the fault of the political persuasion of people in the White House pushing that they had come to a conclusion regardless of the evidence?
All of that is true. The CIA presented bad intelligence. The White House, the president, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, then hyped it up another level. But the fact is, if the CIA had accurately reported that the Iraqi arsenal of weapons of mass destruction did not exist, and in fact had been almost entirely destroyed in years gone by, could we have gone to war? One of history's great what-ifs.
Well, when you talk about that, I'm curious. To me, the core question here is, did they get it wrong, or did they know and deceive?
They got it wrong.
And which of those is worse?
Kind of six of one kind, half a dozen of the other, isn't it?
Yeah, especially if you end up in a place where we've lost thousands of our men and had tens of thousands of them wounded, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis have died as well. So when we talk about the CIA in the present tense, are we talking about failures in just the last 8 years? Or are we talking about it going back to the Clinton years, or are we talking about it going back much, much further and being an institutional problem of generations?
Well, there are institutional problems of generations. We, as Americans, are not very good at the language and the history and the culture of the people that we want to command and contain and influence and control. We don't speak Russian, not very much, during the Cold War. we don't speak Arabic or Chinese today. That's a huge problem, because we can build all the spy satellites we want at $1 billion a pop, and we do. But the name of the game is to know your enemy. And the only way to know what another person thinks is to talk to them. And that is the business of spies. But you can't talk to them if you can't speak the language.
When did we stop our personal one-on-one, man-on-the-street, woman-in-the-office spying and become so dependent on electronics and surveillance from space that we hurt ourselves?
Well, the argument between spies and gadgets has been going on since the 50s, and it's never going to stop. You need both, obviously. But, again, we as Americans have a touching faith in technology to solve our problems, when the problems tend to exist within the human mind and the human heart.
As a taxpayer, Tim, should I see the CIA as a waste of my tax dollars?
Well, let me put it to you this way. We are now spending $2 billion a day on the military. A day. Billion with a B. The CIA and the rest of the intelligence community chew up less than 10% of that. Good intel is worth more than 100 smart bombs, okay? Because the war that we're in is primarily an intelligence war. It is a war of information and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be one with stealth bombers or with nuclear submarines. It's going to be one with smarts. And we have to get better at it. We have to get better at it. Or we are going to win it or lose it by virtue of our intelligence.
Jim Weiner's book is called Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. We'll talk more about it when we come back in a moment here on News Talk 710, Cairo.
This is Greg Hirschold.
And Jane Shannon.
Inviting you to start your day with the 710 Cairo Morning News from 5 to 9 a.m.
But right now, it's the Dave Ross Show.
On News Talk 710, Cairo.
More about the CIA with Tim Weiner in just a moment here. First on the knuckleheads in the news files. In Utrecht, Holland, three 21-year-old guys ran down the street with their pants pulled down. Okay, they may not have been running since they had their pants around their ankles, but they were moving as quickly as they could. And they got to this restaurant with a big glass window. One of the guys thought it would be funny to moon the people inside, so he pushed his naked tushy up against the window. And the window shattered from the pressure and sent him to the floor. He had lacerations on his buttocks and glass shards and ended up having to be treated at a local hospital. The owner of the restaurant said he wouldn't press charges against the guys for pressing their butts against his window and breaking it as long as they were willing to pay to repair it. And they were willing to cough up the bucks for that. All right, back to Tim Weiner. Tim's book is called Legacy of Ashes. It is an amazing look inside the CIA. Tim has a history of covering the CIA in the 90s for the New York Times. Before that, he worked at the Philadelphia Inquirer, where he won a Pulitzer Prize. And in compiling this book over two decades, he got access to more than 50,000 documents in the archives of the CIA. And he did interviews with 10 directors of the CIA and hundreds of interviews with current and former agents and officials. Is it safe to say, Tim, that you had unprecedented access to the agency?
No, I don't think so. I just stuck to it a little longer than most beat reporters and had a wonderful bit of luck, which is that there was a push in the early 90s to declassify some of the CIA history. It took almost 15 years for the pig to pass through the python, but it finally did. Around the time I sat down to write the book, 2004, 2005, 2006. And a lot of rich documentation for some of the classic periods of the Cold War, 50s, 60s, 70s, came out that made the book a lot more lively.
Did that previously classified material help the CIA make the case for all the good it's done, or just the opposite?
Mostly the opposite.
Hmm.
Look, intelligence work is very hard. It is prone to failure. It is a human endeavor, and the job is to know your enemy, to know what another person is thinking. And That's a very high degree of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And we are new at it, relatively speaking, as Americans. We've only been at it for 60 years. The British have been at it for 500. The Russians for 300.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese for 2,600 years. So we're newbies, relatively speaking.
You mentioned the Russians. Did the CIA, or does the CIA, deserve credit for the end of the Soviet Union?
No, they did it to themselves, mostly. I mean, the game of spy versus spy, I think, contributed very little to the end of the Cold War.
Really?
I think most people at the CIA would admit that, too. Soviet communism was a rotten economic system. It collapsed of its own weight.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder how much credit Ted Turner gets for putting CNN on the air and having Russians in their homes being able to watch what was going on outside of the Iron Curtain. When I traveled there in the late 80s to do a radio show from Moscow, the thing they were most interested in, besides getting jeans, a pair of blue jeans, was American bubble gum. It stunned me when I was there how little they knew about us, but how much they wanted to know about us.
Yeah, we didn't see each other very clearly during the Cold War, that's for sure.
And speaking of the Russians, after Afghanistan, when the Soviets invaded and the Afghanis pushed them back, thanks to Charlie Wilson, the congressman who was played in the movie by Tom Hanks and many, many others, did the CIA understand that in helping the Afghanis versus the USSR, that they were helping to build what is now our enemy?
I was there a lot in Afghanistan in the 80s and in the 90s, and I saw this with my own eyes. The United States, using the CIA, and in conjunction with the Chinese and the Pakistanis and the Egyptians, poured billions of dollars of weapons into the battlefield to support the Afghan Mujahideen, the holy warriors, the Islamic radicals who were fighting the Soviet Union during the brutal Soviet occupation of Afghanistan in the 1980s. Well, the last Soviet general crossed north and left Afghanistan in February 1988, and the general feeling was, okay, that's it, we won. And we walked away, the United States walked away, leaving tens of thousands of heavily armed Islamic radicals who all hated each other, and each different faction had a leader who wanted to be the king of Afghanistan. And for the next 7 years, these guys spent a great deal of time killing each other and reducing Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, to rubble, and creating a political vacuum into which came the Taliban and Osama bin Laden. So we walked away. We thought we didn't have a dog in that fight. We sure did have a dog in that fight.
What would have happened if we had stayed?
Afghanistan would have been a stable, more stable nation. The Taliban probably never would have came to power. Osama bin Laden would still be farming soybeans in the Sudan.
When you were there through those years, were there discussions among the Americans who were there, the CIA agents and others, about this possibility?
But that's my point, my friend. There weren't any Americans there anymore. Everybody went home. There wasn't any strategic thinking going on.
No, I mean, while we were there helping them fight the Soviet Union.
No one envisioned that.
No one thought about the consequences of a post-Soviet Afghanistan.
That's the problem with covert action. There are always unintended consequences that you cannot always foresee.
Tell me about Rwanda, which I think is probably a similar story.
Well, except that we were really engaged in fighting a real war in Afghanistan. And in Rwanda, we weren't there. We weren't there by design. The will of the United States in the early, mid-1990s to conduct a foreign policy that was based on anything stronger than free trade was low. And the agency, the CIA, I think, did a good job of alerting the Clinton administration to the fact that something terrible was going on there. I mean, obviously, it wasn't only the agency. Every NGO, every human rights group that worked that part of the world was screaming and saying that people are going to get killed here. The CIA put out a study at the end of January 1994 saying 500,000 people might die in Rwanda in the tribal conflict. The White House just studiously ignored it. Nobody focused on it.
Was that because no Americans were really going to be involved in that?
And there wasn't any TV. There wasn't much information.
And it wasn't a national security priority.
No, it's not. But I don't think we covered ourselves with glory there. If we had acted, we could have saved hundreds of thousands of innocent people's lives. One tends to want to do that if one can.
Yeah. So were CIA agents frustrated by their leadership then?
Oh, enormously. And we're not just talking about Rwanda. I mean, throughout the 90s, you know, things had been pretty great there at the start of the decade. The Cold War was over. George Bush the Elder was president. He loved the agency. He had run it himself for less than a year back in the 70s. Things went from pretty great to pretty grim almost overnight in 1993. Bill Clinton didn't know anything about the CIA. He met with his director of Central Intelligence twice in 2 years.
Mm.
By the time George Tenet got around to running the agency in 1996, he was the fifth director in 6 years. You can't run a bowling team like that, much less the world's greatest intelligence service. And we all knew what the consequences of that kind of drift were a little bit after that, about 10 years ago, when Al-Qaeda blew up two of our embassies in Africa, in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam. Well, two at once isn't twice as hard. Two at once is 100 times harder. And we knew then we faced an implacable enemy, and we knew we had to do something. Tenet and the rest of the chiefs of American intelligence wrote a secret report to President Clinton a few weeks later. It said, and I'm quoting, "Unless we as a nation fundamentally change the way in which we gather and analyze intelligence, we are going to suffer a, quote, catastrophic systemic intelligence failure." And the date of that report was September 11, 1998.
Hmm.
Now, in my view, the real disaster didn't come 3 years later. The real intelligence failure was a year after that, when the CIA put out its WMD reporting.
We'll come back and talk more about these things with Tim Weiner, who is going to be appearing tonight at the University of Washington's Henry Art Gallery, talking about his book, Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. I assume you're going to be doing a book signing and doing a Q&A as well, Tim?
Yes, sir.
That'll be at 7 o'clock tonight. You can get there at 6:30, and that's when the doors will open up. Should be fascinating to hear him go on at length about this, and we will continue to do some of that here on News Talk 710 Cairo after this.
Live from Seattle, this is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 710 Cairo.
The annals of the Central Intelligence Agency are filled with folly and misfortune, along with acts of bravery and cunning. They are replete with fleeting successes and long-lasting failures abroad. The one crime of lasting consequence has been the CIA's inability to carry out its central mission, informing the president of what is happening in the world. Those lines are from Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA, a terrific book by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Tim Weiner, who's joining me here today on News Talk 710 Cairo. Before the break, Tim, you were talking about the Clinton years and how President Clinton had a horrible relationship with the CIA. In fact, only meeting a couple of times with his director, James Woolsey, and oftentimes ignoring information that was being passed up to him from the agency. So was this a White House that was just not interested in intelligence and couldn't take the time to care? Or was this a matter of the agency not able to impress upon the executive branch the importance of what they were trying to tell them?
Several things. The White House had very little trust in the CIA. The White House also had, for most of the first 5 years of the Clinton administration, an incoherent foreign policy. Now, the CIA in the modern day executes American foreign policy. It doesn't make it. And if the policy is incoherent, it's like a sailboat with no wind. The CIA doesn't really know what to do. It doesn't have any marching orders. But by 1998, when Al-Qaeda announced itself as a global presence, blowing up our two embassies in Africa, I don't think anybody had any question what the mission was at that point. The problem was, could the CIA execute it? We were saying that right after those embassy bombings 10 years ago, Tenet warned the White House we needed to fundamentally change the way we did intelligence in this country, or we would suffer a catastrophic systemic intelligence failure. In my view, that failure took place 4 years after that report in 2002, when the CIA misassessed and misread the threat of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
4 years later?
Yes, in 2002.
Didn't it really start, though, in the late 90s, when the CIA was beginning to follow up on some of the work of the UN inspectors who had then been kicked out because of some Clinton-era policies from Saddam Hussein's Iraq?
Well, in fact, the best reporting on the ground that the CIA had from Iraq was a consequence of those continuing UN weapons inspections. They ceased. We and the United Nations withdrew those inspectors at the end of 1998.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the last best intelligence came out of there. So you have a situation where we go to war on the basis of bad intelligence. And this is folly. This is how great nations lose power and stumble and fall. We can't afford to do this again, which is why we need the very best intelligence in this country. We need to rebuild our capacity to do espionage and intelligence analysis in this country.
Not only did we go to war on bad intelligence, but even planning for what would happen after the initial invasion, after the shock and awe, after the, quote, mission accomplished, unquote, phase of the first few months of the war, was the CIA telling the White House and the Pentagon, you know, this will be relatively easy, and then we'll be able to get democracy flowing here? Or was it coming the other way?
I can sum that up for you in something President Bush said in July 2004, which is when things started to go south in a major way in Iraq. And a reporter asked him, Mr. President, didn't the CIA tell you that things could get a little dicey in Iraq post-Saddam? And the president said, well, the CIA said things could be great, and the CIA said things could be lousy. They were just guessing. Just guessing.
Just guessing.
And with that phrase, the President of the United States cut the CIA's throat.
This is the same agency that his dad once ran.
Yeah, someday someone is going to unravel the relationship between those two men, and that'll be a hell of a book.
What needs to be done now to restore or perhaps build for the first time an intelligence agency that we can trust?
Several things. They won't be easy, and they won't be quick. I believe in this country we need a national intelligence university that is every bit as strong and powerful and respected as the United States Military Academy at West Point, the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis. We need to train up a whole generation of Americans in the language, in the history, in the culture of the people and places that we are interested in the world. We need to speak Arabic. We need to speak Chinese. We need to speak Hindi. We need to speak Urdu. We need to speak Pashto, the language of eastern Afghanistan, which the British called the language that would be spoken in hell because it's so difficult. We need to probably institute this place of higher learning above ground, overtly, and below ground, covertly, training up analysts and covert action officers. We aren't turning them out fast enough, or with the talent enough, or with the marching orders coherent enough to sufficiently protect and defend the United States today.
Tim, if you know that after 20 years of working on this book and many, many years covering the CIA both inside and out, if you know that, why don't they know that?
They being whom?
The agency.
Well, I think they do know it, but it's not something they want to advertise. I mean, they want to project, they need to project, they have to project an image of success and, you know, all-seeing, all-knowing, global reach. You see that in their advertisements, in print and in television. You know, they need to, they want people to believe it's like The Bourne Identity or 24 or Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly don't want people to believe it's like Get Smart. But in fact, it is not like that. It is not glamorous. The CIA does not have global reach. It is a relatively small, relatively weak organization of people who are pushed beyond their limits, trying to do things that are damn near impossible.
It's News Talk 710 Cairo. Paul Harris for Dave Ross talking with Tim Weiner. His book is Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. He'll be talking about it tonight at the University of Washington's Henry Art Gallery. Doors will open at 6:30, and he'll be there at 7, signing books and doing a Q&A and talking about some of these very subjects. Tell me about these CIA agents, because people do picture Jason Bourne or James Bond or the movie spies that we've seen. What is a CIA agent really like?
Well, they fall into two basic categories at CIA headquarters. The larger group is analysts. Those are people who live in suburban Maryland and suburban Virginia, have degrees, sometimes advanced degrees, in country studies or economics. And they go to work every day in their little cubicles. Their IT is terrible, by the way.
Is that right?
Terrible. and
We would think that they have, maybe they don't have Q making fantastic gadgets for them, but you'd think at least they would be high tech enough to be on the cutting edge when it comes to computers and other information technology. No?
It's a government bureaucracy.
Yeah.
So that's the analyst. They work very hard trying to figure out what's going on in the world, but there's a tendency, there's a cultural tendency there to come up to somebody who's been working on, let's say, Morocco for 2 years and to say, congratulations, you're the Mali analyst. And then 2 years later say, congratulations, you're the South Africa analyst. There's a... They pride, they value generalists over specialists. Then there are the ops guys, the clandestine service. Very heavy military ethos, as it should be, generally military training. And these are the guys who've got to work overseas. Okay. Traditionally, in the past, CIA officers in the clandestine service overseas posed as diplomats, State Department diplomats, and worked out of U.S. embassies. It was convenient to do that way. If you got caught, you had your diplomatic passport, your diplomatic immunity, you wouldn't be thrown in a stinking jail somewhere. But that's not what we need anymore. We need people who are going to work under non-official cover, posing as something they're not. Businessmen, criminals, weapons dealers, and their job is to recruit spies. This is not easy, to get people to commit treason against their country, against their cause, and work for the United States. I'd say it's exponentially harder than it was during the Cold War.
When you talk about recruiting spies, you're really talking about our spies, our covert agents recruiting people who would be informers and give them information.
That's right.
Yeah.
Secret agents.
Right.
And I believe it was relatively easier for foreigners to volunteer to work for the CIA. Most of them were volunteers rather than recruits. People from the old Soviet Union in particular, because we stood for freedom. We stood for democracy. We stood for justice in this world. The Soviets tried to steal those words, but they failed, of course.
And in many places where we were trying to do this, weren't they under the thumb of some brutal dictator, so working against them, while dangerous for them, would hopefully in the long run gain them some measure of freedom?
That was the idea. Now imagine how much harder it is today for the CIA to recruit among the Islamists from the Mediterranean to the Pacific spies, because